Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. One of the things missing from the Netflix documentary, Murder Among the Mormons, was an unknown $500,000 deal between Brent Ashworth and Mark Hoffman. We're going to talk about that deal. Mark actually wrote it down, and it was found partially burned in the back of his MR2 after that bomb exploded. So we're going to find more out about that with Brent Ashworth. And oh, by the way, if you'd like to win a free copy of Brent's book, Show and Tell, sign up at gospeltangents.com/Ashworth, and you could win a copy of this book right here. It's like a $50 value. So it's got lots of color photographs of Brent and some of the things he's got. Like this. So it's a fantastic thing. Oh, and by the way, on the back, that's Lucille Ball's green dress. So pretty cool about that. So anyway, once again, sign up at gospeltangents.com/Ashworth and you could win a free copy. I'll hold the drawing in April sometime. So sign up today. Now back to our conversation.
In fact, I remember Hoffman taking me into the vault of the church historian, Homer Durham. He had complete permission to do what he wanted to in there. It was crazy. But Hoffman had the keys to the kingdom. They didn't talk much about that on Netflix, but the fact is that he took me in there one day and we saw stuff I've never seen since or heard of since, you know, like David Patton's journal. I mean, has anybody seen that? I got to see it. And he showed me this the handwriting of Martin Harris Jr. so that I could compare. The body of the letter was not written by Martin Harris, just the signature. But he says, this matches the handwriting of his son. And he showed me the actual handwriting in the vault of the church historian. After Mark went to prison, I didn't get invited back for a long time. and when I did go back, because I realized I was innocent, I was trying to do good. But when I did go back many years later, everything was glassed in with cameras everywhere. Nobody was waltzing in anywhere, you know. It was a whole lot different. But Mark really had the keys to the kingdom when he was there. He could do pretty much what he wanted to. And he took me with him on that day anyway. But you know, the problem I had with Mark during that day was he was a liar. I mean, you just couldn't count on him to tell you the truth. And, I had a hard time believing he was a killer until Kenny Farnsworth stuck that burned stuff in front of me that day. And I came to my own conclusion. And I thought ever since, you know, I'm not going to deal with anybody that lies to me, you know, in this business ever again. I mean, that's what I learned from the Hoffman thing. If somebody's lying and cheating, you don't want to deal with them. Because they could be killers, too. They could do anything at that point. And we know who the father of lies is, right? So I agree. At any rate, I don't know where we're at, but we've kind of meandered all over.
Yeah, well, so the night before so October 14th.
Right.
You got a check.
Oh, yeah. He'd given me a bum check. I decided years before that I was never going to take a check from Mark again. And on that $50,000 down, he says, well, he gave me $5,500 for some reason, odd number.
Missed the decimal.
Yeah. It's just, this is a down payment on the down payment. I mean, I didn't realize how bad off financially he was and how he was trying to, you know, play Peter against Paul and all of that.
So it just seems so weird to me. So because he's trying to get money from the church, he's trying to get money from the Library of Congress, and then he's paying you for almost $500,000.
Well, and not only that, he had been to my office a couple weeks before that with Shannon Flynn, who was at that point after Lynn had kind of been out of it, Lynn Jacobs. Shannon, he took with him during those last couple of weeks with him. They came to my office, the two of them, and they offered me the papyrus, you know. I had the piece of papyrus. I didn't realize that they were getting that from my friend Ken Rendell, a dealer back in Boston. Ken and I talked about that while I was on my mission to Boston. We were out there one day and talked about that again. Ken and I had known each other since long before I knew Mark, since 72, and we were very dear friends. And I bought some big things from Ken Rendell, and he's still a dear friend of mine. He has his own World War II museum. It's one of the finest in the world. And just a dear friend. Anyway, he had asked me at the book fair in New York in 1985. He says, "Brent, I want to talk to you about something." And the only place, because Hoffman was there, along with some people from the church and Galen Rust, Al Rust's son. And he said, "I want to talk to you about something, but I can't talk out here on the floor. Let's go to the men's room." So we went to the men's room and talked. And he said how he had sent some papyrus from the time of Cleopatra, the Ptolemaic period of Egypt, the latter period, to Hoffman to sell. And he hadn't been able to get paid for it. He needed $12,500, and he couldn't get Hoffman to pay the invoice for it. And he told me some other things there, too, which were interesting, but the other things were more interesting because they had to do with a Joseph Smith piece. But anyway, I completely forgot about that. I says, "Well, I'll try to track that now." But I completely forgot about that when he told me about the Joseph Smith piece, which was a piece I'd been tracking around the country for years. And he'd given that to Hoffman, and I was so angry over that. But anyway, he couldn't get paid out of either one of them, and I went and got the Joseph Smith piece from him, from Hoffman. Paid Rendell $25,000 for it at the time. And it's still one of the finest pieces we have. But it was just briefly in Hoffman's hands for a short time. At any rate, this other piece, the papyrus, I didn't put the two together when Shannon and Mark came to my office just a couple weeks before the bombs went off, you know, in Spanish Fork, my office down there. And Hoffman had this, and he said he wanted $30,000 for it, and it was from the Joseph Smith papyrus. Well, I was excited about that, and I says, "But how do I determine it's from the Joseph Smith papyrus?" And I said, "I know Hugh Nibley, because I'd grown up in the ward, Manivu Chapel, when I was a kid, where Hugh Nibley and his family, he had a big family, went to church. And I knew Dr. Nibley," and he says, "No, don't take it to him. Take it to this guy." And he had a phone number with Ed Ashment, was the guy's name. I never heard of him. And a phone number. And I think before Shannon and him reached their Mark's car again, I made the call to Ashment, and I got him. Usually you don't get people right off. But I got him on the phone, and I says, "Your name, Ed Ashment?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "Well, I'm Brent Ashworth." He knew who I was from collecting and all that. And I said, "Mark Hoffman and Shannon were just in my office with a piece of papyrus that they claimed was from the Joseph Smith papyrus. And Mark told me that I should call you on any authentication on that." He says, "Well, Mark's never brought it by to me." He says, "He told me about it, but I haven't seen it." So it was a very short call. So I get off the call, and it didn't happen at all like what Mark told me. This guy would be able to tell me about it. So I called up Hugh Nibley, because I knew Dr. Nibley, and I says, "You know, Hoffman's just dropped off a piece of papyrus, and I'm wondering if you could take a look at it, you know?" And I didn't realize that Mark had torn up Rendell's piece of original papyrus. He had no appreciation for real history at all. Just like adding Joseph Smith's phony signature to a real first edition Book of Mormon, or Mark Twain's real, using Mark Twain's real first edition of Tom Sawyer to put a phony inscription from Mark Twain in it, you know? He had no respect for history. And I didn't realize that at the time. But anyway, he'd torn off a piece of papyrus that had five heads in a row. You know, Egyptian figures on it. It was like this, and it was later put out when the prosecutors found it in Steve Christensen's safe deposit box after his death. But I had it for that weekend, couple weekends before. In fact, I even showed it to our kids for family home evening. I passed it around the table and said to our little kids, I won't be able to buy this probably, but I want you to see a piece of Joseph Smith's papyrus. And when they later saw it on the front of the Deseret News after it was found in Steve's safe deposit box, my kids, several of them, said, "Yeah, I remember that, Dad." You know, they remember me showing it to them. But at any rate, the point was is that Hoffman wanted $30,000, and I agreed to pay $30,000 for it, but then I didn't have the money, and I didn't know if it was genuine. And I went to Dr. Nibley, and after a few days, Mark got a hold of me, wanted to know what I was doing on it. And I got a hold of Dr. Nibley, and I went over to the Y Library where he was, and he gave it back to me, and he said he authenticated it as a piece of real, you know, papyrus, which it is. And he said it could very well be from the Joseph Smith papyrus, because it's like the hypocephalus. I says, the hypo what? I didn't know what he was talking. He's talking about facsimile two.
Right.
I didn't know what that was. I never heard of, I mean, I knew what that was, but I didn't know the term. So he explained to me that, you know, the mummies were, when they were wrapped up, they put this thing on the back of their heads when they wrap them up, and it was known as the hypocephalus, signifying that this part goes on. The mind of spirit goes on after the body's dead. And Joseph Smith liked that, and so he put that in as facsimile number two. And when it was put in the Times and Seasons and later in its own separate, when F.D. Richards published it, in its old separate fold-out, it was big enough originally, you could fold it out, members of the church were studying that like crazy, you know? And Hugh Nibley was saying they should never have studied it, because Joseph wasn't putting it in for that. He was putting it in for the idea of eternal life. This is another example, you know, just like the lotus blossom that they carved into the staircase of the Kirtland Temple. We wonder why. Well, because it represented eternal life. Every year, lotus comes back, you know. So the prophet loved that, and he put that idea into the temple, and they carved it into the temple. We still carve plants and things that come back into temples. Any rate, he almost authenticated it, Hugh Nibley. You know? And says, yeah, this looks like it could be, but I can't say for sure. So I knew I didn't have the money, and Hoffman says, well, if you don't have $30,000, bring me that great George Washington letter that you have, the one about giving God the credit for founding our country, you know, which was more valuable. And luckily, I went to my dad with that question, and he says, you know what you got with the Washington. You don't know what you got with this. So I went back to Hoffman and says, I'm sorry, I won't be able to get it, and I returned it. Well, I guess he was angry with me over that deal, because later on he was quoted in prison as saying that the third bomb was for a man that owed him $30,000. And that's in Sillitoe's book. That's just one of many, many tie-ins with the third bomb. I don't have much of a question in my mind now as to who the third bomb was after.
Wasn't your name on the third bomb?
Well, that's what I believe, you know, because one of the cops on the scene read the name Brent, you know, but the rest of the name had burned off by the time, because his car had blown up. And any rate...
Could be you, Brent Ashworth.
Well, I think so, because he had just been at our spot with a time-dated receipt, you know? So I think that kind of nails it all the way around. And when George told me at that BYU book conference, when I got up and said the same thing I did on Netflix, well, I haven't been able to rule myself out. And George says, no, he was after you. And, you know, we had the evidence. So I just kind of take it that, yeah, that was probably meant for me. I'm glad my wife talked. It's like Bud Willoughby said on that first phone call. He didn't tell me about the receipt yet, but he said, probably good you listen to your wife. So, anyway.
All right, so let's just reset a little bit. So the night before the bombing where Steve Christensen died, Mark Hoffman was at your house. He wrote you a check, which you have right there, that bounced.
He had written me a check a week before.
Okay.
And it had bounced.
And it was for
$5,500 against the $50,000 he promised as a down payment for the $435,000 deal. Yeah,
there's just which all he wrote up. Swirling. So, yeah, and so can you show us a copy of that?
Yeah, this is the original check here, and it's dated the 14th of October, 1985. So I have a souvenir of the day before the bombings.
That's quite a souvenir.
He comes in and he says, well, the exact story was, I was really angry that this check bounced.
The previous one, because it was a lot more than $5,500.
Right, it was the same amount as this one, $5,500.
Oh, it was.
And, yeah, it was actually a little deal as part of that bigger deal, and he was paying me $5,500 against the $50,000 down payment.
A down payment on his down payment.
Yeah, on his down payment. And, any rate, he'd written me that check, and I was angry at him. I couldn't get a hold of him. Like I say, if you didn't want to see him, you'd see him. And he showed up on this night before the bombing. my son Matt was upstairs at the front door. I was down in the basement. And he came downstairs and says, "Dad, Mark Hoffman," who he knew was Mark Hoffman, "is at the front door." And I immediately got really angry, you know. And now this is Monday night. This is family night, you know, in the church. And I was a bishop.
Now, let me pause there for just a minute. So you were a bishop. You mentioned that Steve
Sheets
Christensen
was a bishop, Christensen was a bishop. It was like all of us were bishops.
And so he was trying to kill three bishops.
I guess so. Yeah, that seems to be what was going on here. And Al Rust, of course, had been a bishop. So, you know, he wasn't then. But anyway, the point was is that all three of us were. He came to the house. I was really angry when I heard he was at the door. I didn't expect to see him. And I headed up the steps. And there's 15 steps, and I've gone up and down them many times and thought of this since. But as I headed up the steps, I actually heard a voice. I think it's the only time in my life I've ever heard a voice. And it said, "Don't jerk with him today." It was just real direct and something I would understand. So I was ready to give it to him, and I got to the top of the steps, and it was kind of like, "I'd like to kill you, but I'm not going to say anything." You know, I didn't say
"You'd like to kill Mark."
I was that angry, and I didn't say anything. And he came in, and he says, I knew I wrote you a bad check." He says, "I need a pen." So I went and grabbed him a pen, and he sat down, and he wrote a check for $5,000, which is $500 less than this check. And I said at that point, I said, "Mark, we both know this isn't the amount." He says, "Oh, yeah, right." So he wrote another check, and that's this one, at $5,500.
And it was supposed to be $50,000.
Well, that's what it was supposed to have been, yeah. But I'd take anything at this point. So at any rate, he was just fulfilling the check that he'd bounced on me the week before. And he says, "You're not very talkative today." I think he suspected I was going to, you know, really dump on him, because I told him before, I'll never take another check. For several years, I did not take checks from him. So this is right at the end when he
How many checks has he bounced to you, would you say, would you estimate?
Probably a dozen or so. In fact, after, that was early on. After a few of those, it was after the bombings that I got a call from Al Rust one day. Al's attorney had gotten on his judgment to the courts before I did. And so they ended up with all of the stuff from the case, most of the stuff from the case. My attorney was here in Provo, and he was slow getting up there. I had a bigger judgment. Mine was for $500,000 judgment. But it's hard to get blood out of a turnip, right? So we go after whatever we can. What was Mark gone to jail by this time, years before? So whatever we could get. And Al Russ's attorney got there first and got all that stuff. Well, eventually Al needed to sell the stuff, and I paid him $10,000 for what he had left, you know. So I bought...
Because Mark basically financially ruined Al Rust.
Right. Yeah. Rust was really ruined financially. I had a good job, high-paying job, and I was hurt probably financially worse than Rust, but I could suffer it, okay, a little better. And it was awful, but I was more concerned about, the personal side of the case than I was about this, about my son's accident, about other things that had gone on, and my reputation, and so on. But at any rate, the point was is that he comes in, he gives me this check. He says, "You're not very talkative today." I didn't say anything on that. And then as he heads to the front door and goes down the door, I don't know why I said this, but I just said, holding the check up, I just said, "Mark, this check's good, isn't it?" I knew when I said that it wasn't good at all. And it wasn't. It came, you know, stamped, return to maker. But I did have a beautiful souvenir the night before.
Oh, that's just crazy to me.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Brent Ashworth. In our next conversation, Brent will tell us what Mark thought about history and historical documents.
He had no respect for history, and I didn't realize that at the time. But anyway, he'd torn off a piece of papyrus that had five heads in a row, Egyptian figures on it. It was like this, and it was later put out when the prosecutors found it in Steve Christensen's safe deposit box after his death. But I had it for that weekend, couple weekends before, In fact, I even showed it to our kids for Fame Home Evening. I passed it around the table and said to our little kids, I won't be able to buy this probably, but I want you to see a piece of Joseph Smith's papyrus. And when they later saw it on the front of the Deseret News after it was found in Steve's safe deposit box, my kids, several of them, said, yeah, I remember that, Dad. You know, they remember me showing it to them.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, sign up at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and for $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruptions. If you'd like to see the whole video, that's just $8 a month, and you can sign up either at youtube.com/gospeltangents or on our website at gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button. Or you can go to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and I'll just need to make sure that we're Facebook friends, and I'll add you to our insiders group, and you can see the entire interview uncut. If you'd like to get PDF transcripts of our interviews, those are just $10 a month. And for just $15 a month, I will send you paperback versions of our transcripts as soon as they come out. Or, of course, you can buy them on Amazon as well. Go to Amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see all of our transcripts there. Don't forget to sign up for our updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Of course, you can follow us at Gospel Tangents on Twitter. To hear our interviews updated to your podcast player, go to tinyurl.com/gospeltangents and make sure you give us a 5-star review. And of course, you should show your support for Gospel Tangents with one of these cool t-shirts, like this green one, or light blue, sport gray, royal blue, purple, of course black, beautiful gold, and of course Utah red. I've probably left out some colors, but if you want to see more, go to gospeltangents.com/shop and you can get one of these. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.